Good morning and welcome to another exciting edition of BTL Day 4 with the man Frank Scalish. We've been telling stories. We've been, I always want to say the word
bloviating.
Yes, it's bloviating. We've been bloviating recently, and Frank called and he said, we got to have a talk. He said, we haven't had enough maps. We haven't had enough in-depth deep dives. He goes, and I've also gotten some DMs about natural lakes. I said, interesting. So last week we were going to do it, and then we actually bloviated for the hour, the whole show. So we saved it for this week. So we have deals, new products, new colors, new apparel, and a deep dive episode on natural lakes. How's that sound for April 18th, 2024?
Yeah, and some stories to relate to the natural lakes. I'm excited about today's show. I wish it was longer. I wish I could blow the whistle on some upcoming things, but I can't, but I might, but we'll see.
Is that what you kind of showed me, but we're like, I shouldn't really be showing you this?
Yeah, it is 100%. But I have an idea that I think I could sneak it in there and not get in too much trouble.
Well, you threatened, your Italian side came out. You threatened me that if I showed or took a screenshot of it, I would have a severed boar's head on my doorstep the next morning. It is really cool though. I will say this. Here's how I'll tease it.
Yeah, you do it, man.
Congratulations. It's really cool.
Thanks, man.
There's a hint in there just by congratulating Frank on what I've seen, right? That's a good hint. 100%.
That dude, that is so money. So here's the thing. All right. So I went on a small rate, a small tirade this morning. Not too over the top, but it could have got over the top. But anyway, so there is, this is the coolest thing. This is the coolest thing ever. Okay. I didn't do the shirt, and I'm really pissed that I didn't do it because it's very cool. So on LureNet, there's a thing we're doing right now called Shad Week. Okay. And so I'm so pissed I didn't do this. So it's Shad Week. All right. So there's going to be specials. Seriously, dude, come on. That shirt is absolute money. So it's got a gizzard shad in
there.
It
appears that Luke Palmer got one of those shirts. Where's yours, Uncle Frank?
I should have had a box of those things here. I would wear the silk screen off of it. But anyhow, I love the shad because, honest to God, dude, it's a shad. So,
that's whoever designed that is brilliant. That is a fantastic. And then they trademarked Shad Week. I see a little TM next to
it. Yeah, I know, dude. Like I said, I'm so pissed I didn't think of it. Those guys, some of our creative team down there are really on top of it, man. I have to give them that. They are on top of that. I want a hoodie like that in the worst possible way.
But only a high quality hoodie like all the Day 4 and BTL hoodies are now.
Absolutely. I won't tolerate a POS. But so there's going to be specials going through Shad Week. And the first special that they have. Okay, so you guys remember a long time ago, I did a show with an old suspending Rattlin' Rogue. I took the chrome and blue one and I scratched all the chrome off of it.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the most viewed shows in Day 4 history.
Right. So that bone color, they matched it. They matched it in spinnerbait skirts and heads, and they matched it in the swim jig and it's in the covert series spinnerbait and the finesse covert series spinnerbait. And they did trailers. Look at, I'm like a kid in a candy store. And
they got you those though, at least.
Well, yeah.
They'd have thrown in the old Shad Week shirt when they sent you the bone covert spinnerbaits.
That would have been nice. So, and they got the trailers in bone. Now I know that this bone probably is not showing up super good on my computer screen, but it is the real bone color.
Does that show up better?
Yeah, that shows up better.
So it's like that. Yeah, it's like that old yellowish, rogue plastic color.
100%. So this is the bone. So let's talk about this for a minute. I know we covered it when I scratched the paint off of the Rogue. I know we covered it, but here's the deal with that particular tone of bone. Okay, in clear water,
we're getting demonetized. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, I know. Oh yeah, Matt, bring it down, buddy. Bring it down.
Keep going.
And so with that color of bone, in clear water, it has a subtle vibrancy to it, very realistic, but pretty visible. Okay. But in off-colored water, the thing practically glows. Mm-hmm. All right. But here's the neat characteristic of bone. It will take on, based on the color of your water, not clarity, color. Like there's some waters that are super clear and they're really clear, but they look like Coca-Cola, tannin colored water. Some water is clear, but it has a green hue to it. Some water is clear, but it has a brown hue to it. And then of course you've got your off colored water that's just got a lot of particulate matter in it, and it could get dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. So this bone color takes on different effects based on how that water clarity is. Mm-hmm. And that's why the bone color is such a good color. So here's another thing. I want to show you guys something, because where did I put it? There's another thing about the Bone Soft Plastics. All right. So everybody knows I have a chartreuse dye pen here. Everybody knows that if you take a pearl white bait and you put the chartreuse on it, it's a very pearly, bright chartreuse. But if I were to take it, and I'm going to show you, and I'm going to actually show you how I do it on my swim bait trailers. So I'll take the Sharpie, or not Sharpie, the dye
pen. This is like is this like a Zoom pen?
Yeah,
it's
a Zoom pen, no garlic. I don't like garlic.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Doesn't that smell like a marker?
Yeah, but it don't matter.
You don't think that matters?
No, dude, I catch so many.
I mean, if I have to choose between garlic and marker, I'm going garlic every time.
All right. Well, you do the garlic one day. I'll do the regular marker, and we'll see if it makes a difference.
Because I don't catch the fish that want to get high. I think I catch the fish that are in the mood for spaghetti.
That's true. Okay. So what I do is I'll take this thing, and on the back of the paddle, I start at the top, and I go heavy on the top, and then I'll feather it down to the bottom. So it's almost, see how it fans out? It's feathered. It's not the whole thing. It's feathered. Yep. So let me do it.
Darker. I'm trying. I don't know why I can't go.
Anyhow, it's my lighting.
Why do we never use that layout? Don't you like that layout better than this layout like we normally do?
I don't know. Let me see it. Oh, that's so weird to me.
I know, but what's the purpose of that layout if we have this layout?
Okay, so randomly switch it throughout the show. I don't know what to tell you.
Sorry, I was trying to go full screen so people could see that easier. But
that's okay. It's my lighting. So let me see something here.
Oh, there we go. Yep.
Okay, so that's how I feather it out. Then on the back top of the tail, I'm going to have to put this thing down so you won't see me do it, but I'm going on the back of the top of the skinny part of the tail. So all you're going to get is that right on the back. Now, here's the cool thing about this. Should I leave this light off?
That's up to you.
Okay. So this is not very vibrant. So what this does on the bone is it almost has more of a chartreusey green look to it. It's not that bright yellow chartreuse. Mm-hmm. It's more of a subdued green. So this is how I tint my bone color trailers. So on the spinnerbait, you're going to have, I'm going to knock this off now. On the spinnerbait, what you're going to have is you have the bone, and this is a finesse series covert, but on the spinnerbait, you're going to have the bone with that little flash of chartreuse on it. It's very subtle, but man, does it make a difference. There's a lake by me that is the killer move right there on it. Most of the guys that live here will know what lake it is. But that's the killer like move. And that's how I doctor up the bone series. But now, and they also have, you know, the swim bait trailers for the swim baits. So I'm going to show you two things. This is a pet peeve I have. I never take a jig, a swim jig, or anything and tie it on and shove a trailer on it. So the first thing I do is I take the skirt. See how I have it separated? The front mm-hmm. is forward. The back is backwards. So here's
basically all the strands that are above the, just for the iTunes listeners, every strand that is above the rubber band
goes over the head.
Yeah, and so you're just separating it.
Right, and then every strand behind goes towards the hook.
Okay.
So here is, this is the proper way to trim. So the first thing I do is I take all the strands that are going over the head. And this is going to be weird to you guys, but I'm cutting them totally straight, right across. I'm trimming them down about a half an inch and cutting them straight. Now I'm taking the strands that are hanging down from the bottom of the jig, and I am going to teardrop them. So if I'm starting at the bottom of the skirt and I'm cutting at an angle up and cutting at an angle up on top of the skirt. So I have a teardrop shape on it. You see the teardrop?
Yep.
Okay. So when you drop the jig down, look at how it flares.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Okay. Because if you don't, the strands in the front are too long and they lay over the strands in the back too tight. It doesn't flare as much.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And so when I put the trailer on, now watch what happens when the trailer goes on. So this is a yum craw chunk. The trailer's going on and I can't see, but we're going to, hopefully it's straight. So when the trailer goes on and I smash it up against the rubber band, now look at how it flares.
Mm-hmm.
So what that does when you're doing the pump and the shake with the thing, it's going to do more of that undulating movement.
Breathing.
It's going to breathe better. And that's how you do the swim jig. So anyway, that's my bone series detour from today's show. But I like it.
That was a hell of a tip.
Yeah, because I do the same thing with the spinnerbait, by the way. I trim it the same way. You can see the top ones are flat, and then the bottom ones come to a point. But here's the trick with the spinnerbait. Do not have your bottom ones hanging far enough down that it interferes with the movement of your trailer. You want it above that so your paddle tail swims. And those are my tips right there. And trust me, they work. Beautiful. Anyway.
Shadweek Bone Series available now, lurenet.com. Use code capital BTL24 at checkout.
Now,
how much off do they get? 15% off regularly priced items. So
yeah, and I think
loyal listener.
Now remember this. If there's a discount offered on the site already, the discount code doesn't work. But anyhow, so that is.
But I mean, dude, you with 15% off, the spinnerbaits are only $10. Trailers are only $349. So I mean, in today's day and age, if you can get a Hildenbrandt bladed covert series spinnerbait for $8.50, that's a pretty good deal.
Oh, without a doubt, dude. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I used to change all my spinnerbait blades out to Hildebrandt blades, and Frank forgot to use the code.
Remember last time he forgot to use our code?
I did it again. Drunkwood called me. He's been smashing them on some of the FX Rogues, and I went downstairs after we had a conversation. He just took second in an event on one of the FX color Rogues, and I have them. I have a box of them, and I had gone downstairs, and lo and behold, I didn't have any on the wall backups. So they only sent me three of each of them. Okay. And I had put them in my boat, and thinking that I'm going to get more, and I didn't get more. So Drunkwood called me, and he's like, dude, I got to get more of those Rogues, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, go to Lure.
How many Rogues is he going through?
I'm not sure, but I don't care. I mean, as long as you're catching fish on it, dude, if I catch 4-pound smallies on them, I'll break one every day if I can catch.
That's true.
So at any rate, so I go on LureNet, and they have stock in them. So I order a bunch of them. Okay. And I was in such a hurry to get my order in and then call Drunkwood and tell them they're still available on LureNet, I forgot to plug in the BTL code. And so I paid full price for them. So I called Drunkwood. I said, dude, they got them on LureNet. Get them right now, because I don't know how much stock is available. Get them right now. And don't forget to use the BTL code, because I just ordered $150 worth and forgot to do the code. And so he texts me back later on that night, a couple of laughy faces. And he said, I forgot to use the effing code too.
That's the whole point of the code, is to show the value of BTL to LureNet so they can continue to sponsor day four.
Well, 100%. But you know what? I was in such a hurry, and I was so amped up because I don't have enough of them to last me. Yeah. So especially where I live, because we got a lot of pike here. And so you could lose one. You could literally make five casts and lose four of them. You know what I mean? So I didn't have enough. So I was freaking out. Anyway, I was so excited that they still had them that I ordered them and just, click buy now right away. And then boom, over. I missed it. So yeah.
Come on, guys.
This
is my livelihood here. Use the code. Save money.
Use the code, please.
Benefits everyone. All right. Deep dive.
Natural Lakes. So
Natural Lakes. And then stay tuned, because you at the end of the show after are gonna tease it, and then you also have a major life announcement.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that too.
You can't say that. You can't. You're gonna have to strike that line from the show. You can't forget about that. Major life announcement.
So I was telling my buddy about the fishing day I had the other day, and we were going through the whole day, and then we got off on the tangent about saving the world from its own problems. And I said, oh yeah, by the way,
you got to save it to the end of the show.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you better just remind here. I'm going to write a note right now.
I don't forget.
That's just how my brain works, guys. I'm talking about something, but I'm thinking four things ahead of time.
But it's Shad Week. You don't understand.
Yeah, it's Shad Week, for crying out loud.
All right, have at it. Natural Lakes, Frank.
Okay, so everybody, so I always say, if you have a show idea, DM me or email matt@basszone.com the idea, and then we'll put it into play. I got a DM, a guy wanted to know about Natural Lakes. Well, as fate may have it, I got like three or four more DMs on the same subject. So I said, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do it because I know if I get three or four, there's way more that want to know about it. If I get one, it's iffy. You know what I mean? But if I get more than one, I know that there's people that want to. So we're doing natural lakes. So the first thing that you have to understand is, you know, a natural lake is really a lake without evidence of a dam, or a lake that was natural and they put a dam in it to maintain a water level. It's not a functioning dam. In other words, it's not generation, electric power, none of that shit. It's just to keep the water level maintained. Okay. Most natural lakes occur in five regions. Basically, it's your upper Midwest, it's your northern Appalachians, your temperate plains, and obviously the coast. Okay. So if you were to look at a map, now I got to go through some of my drawings here because I should have put them in order. Oh, here we go. So if you were to look at a map, this map will indicate where most of natural lakes occur. All right. So you can see, where you're going to find most of the natural lakes. Now there's natural lakes dotted all amongst the central part of the United States, but there's not enough to count. There's not enough to make a difference in that map. So that's why a lot of it's empty. If you see dots there, there's a lot of them there. So anyhow, this is where most of the natural lakes occur. And this is the map that I was making when I got Sharpie all over my stinking computer screen. So anyhow, so that's that. Now, for the sake of this show, we're not talking about the Great Lakes. We know they're natural lakes. We're not going to talk about them because they're very different than most of the natural lakes that you're going to find, you know, throughout the United States. So here's first things to consider. Was the lake formed by a glacier, or was the lake formed because it was part of a floodplain? They will have two very different makeups. A glacier lake will have long flats that come out and steep break lines on the flats. They'll have more rock involved in it. They'll be both, like St. Clair is a glacier lake, but it has both grass and rock. So you have to determine the makeup of the lake. Most of Florida lakes, floodplains, they're shallow, they're flat. Most of the structure you're going to encounter in Florida is old shell beds, old coral beds, you know, stuff that were pertaining to the ocean that built Florida, basically. So you got to keep this stuff in mind. Is the lake a grass lake, or is the lake completely void of grass? Now, most of the people in that are going to experience natural lakes, it is going to have grass in them. Some of the ones farther up north may not, based on the mountainous region that they're in. So you got to keep that in mind also. Champlain, Oneida, the Finger Lakes in Florida, those give you the best mix of all the worlds combined. You'll have rocks, you'll have offshore structure, you'll have grass flats, et cetera, et cetera. So you got to remember where you're at and what you're looking at. That's very important. So the dish bowl type grass lakes, all right, these are what most people are going to encounter. They're pretty mundane. There might be a few structural breaks in them, but for the most part, they're pretty mundane. Grass is the predominant cover source. It lacks structure. I'm not going to say there won't be any because I haven't been on a natural lake where I haven't found some. It's just not going to be so prevalent. Okay. So what that happens is you're going to say, okay, well, vegetation is the most important thing. What makes this grass patch better than that grass patch? And the reality is going to be two things: bottom composition And is there more than one specific type of vegetation in the area? What I have found on all these lakes, if I come in contact with two or more types of vegetation, that's usually holding the fish. The other thing I noticed about it is there are times when the bass will be grass specific, where they want coontail, or they want milfoil, or they want hydrilla, or they want rice, or bulrushes, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to, you can pattern the bass based on the different types of vegetation that are found in the lake. The coolest thing is what I like to do, because I like offshore fishing a ton. I can't get away from it. I always look for the deepest grass that's growing in the lake. That is going to tell you the main, you don't necessarily have to ever fish deeper than the deepest grass grows. And so that eliminates piles of water on these lakes. If you know the grass only grows down 8 feet, you don't have to worry about deeper. You follow me? So that's a trick. That's a good trick for if you're an offshore guy and you're fishing grass lakes. The other thing is, what I like to do is, and I say this all the time, every time we talk about any lake with grass in it, I always look for grass with rock or hard bottom outside the edges of it. And here's the thing, on these dishpan type, you know, mundane lakes, you're going to encounter a lot of sand. Depending on some of the backwater areas, you're going to encounter mud and muck. And so what you want to do is you want to look for bottom composition. And generally speaking, sand to hard bottom is better than mud and muck, except sometimes in the spring, the dark bottoms warm up faster. So the bass that are back there already will be a little bit more active. Their bass aren't seeking out the muddy bottoms. It's just the ones that are already back there might have experienced a, 2 to 4 degree water temperature difference and maybe a little more active. So here's what we're looking at. So this is typically what I would look for. And remember, in a shallow dishpan lake, any little break line, any little drop in bottom contour, this could be a foot to 2 feet. It doesn't have to be a massive 15-foot drop. It could just be a couple of feet. That's going to be a fish holding area right here because there's not a lot of structure in the lake. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing in the world to look for in grass is isolated rocky bottom right outside the grass edge. Now, sometimes what happens is the rock will creep up into the grass and you'll see that the grass is growing, but there'll be a few open pockets of where there's no grass growing. You could bet your bottom dollar that that's rock bottom. It doesn't have to be big boulders. It could be slate or shale, but it's going to be rock and hard bottom, and the grass won't grow there. So those are little pockets of high percentage places that you
could. That's like 95 to 100% bite in certain lakes.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like you find one of those on Oneida in the summertime, and there's a bunch of them.
You're smoking. You
100% of the time, 100% of the cast in those will get a bite by something. Correct. Either a pickerel, a walleye, a goggle eye, a largemouth, or a smallmouth.
Yeah, 100%. So that's traditionally what I look for. The other thing I want to find is I want to find broken edges. And when I say broken edges, you'll see the grass. It may not be all the way to the top, but you'll see the grass. And then you'll see parts where it starts to dissipate. And there you might see an isolated clump here or an isolated clump here. And then it gradually disappears. So what you're looking at is there's probably a gradual slope in the bottom. The light penetration isn't getting down good enough. And the grass is starting to break up where it's not going to grow anymore. And so those come out, they usually form in the form of fingers or gradual tapering flats. Now, mm-hmm. One of my favorite techniques is cranking grass. I crank the grass edges. A lot of guys don't do this because it's honestly, it's a pain in the rear end, because if you're not, if you have to pay attention. So I'm going to go on a tangent, but this is a juice giver right here. So you have to pay attention. So what I do is I have on my cranking rods, especially when I'm cranking grass, I have my power rod set up with different line sizes. I have 12, 14, 17, 20. Okay. Where I may have a DD22 and I'll have it on 20 and 17. And then I'll take a deep little end and I'll put it on 14 and 12. So now here's what happens. I have control over how deep that bait is going. So as that grass starts to change levels on me, depth ranges, and when I say the grass changes depth, where I'm talking about where the grass line ends or where it starts to get shorter and shorter as it gets deeper and deeper, like this here. I'll just show you guys because this will be. Okay, so as the grass gets down deeper and deeper, it's not going to be as tall. So I know in this range, can you see this? Because I can't.
Oh, yeah, no, it's perfect.
I know in this range here, I'm throwing my deep little ends, and I'm going to throw 14 up here, 12 down here. Then I'm going to get my DD22s because this might only be 8 or 9 feet, and I want to kill the depth on these crankbaits. I don't want them to dive maximum, mm-hmm. So I want to kill the depth. So I'll go to my heavier line for this range in here where I'm just ticking the tops of the grass. Every now and then you'll get hung up in the grass and you just snap the rod a couple of times and poof it through the grass. That's, you're going to get tons of strikes doing that. The other trick I do is I'll poof it through the grass and then I kill the bait. And as the bait, because a DD22 will back up a lot at rest as it floats to the surface because of the bill design, it backs up and a deep little land will back up, but it doesn't back up as much because the bill design's a little narrower and a little smaller, but it'll still back up. So I notice with the DD22, a lot of times when I snatch it through the grass and I kill it, it starts to back up and the bass literally blows slack in the line when they eat it. Now, out for this range out here, because this is going to be my deepest range in this particular body of water, this I'm going to put a DD22 on 12 because I need it to get maximum depth to reach the edge where the grass stops growing. And these are my crankbait tips, okay? And I also will experiment with different vibrating, the way the bait pitches and rolls and vibrates. So on some lakes, the Fat Free 7 might be getting it done because it's a little more wild. So you have to experiment with different bill designs also. Like the NXS, if I've got a big flat that I'm fishing, and I know that flat is 10 to 12 or 10 to 15, I'll throw the NXS because it gets right down to the depth and I can just keep it bumping the top of the grass. And I'm on that flat the whole time. Because when you're fishing flats, right, you're not necessarily fishing a structural element, although there may be isolated boulders on that flat, isolated grass patches on that flat. You're trying to cover water because the fish are generally roaming on that flat. They're using it to feed. Like here, I was out fishing Tuesday. My cameraman and I went out Tuesday. And that's exactly what happened. There was a big flat in the lake and it had a mixture of rock and grass on it. The flat was anywhere from 4 to 8 feet deep before it dropped off into the abyss. And it drops off at the end of this flat, like boom, straight down. So I knew that the smallmouths use this flat to spawn, but they're not spawning yet because the water temperature is only 50 degrees over there. So I said, we're just going to cover water. We're going to run into the fish that are cruising on the flat. So I picked up the Rogue and I started catching smallmouths on the Rogue on one of my FX colors. So the wind died on us. The lake literally went slick, flat glass. And I'm like, well, the rogue bite's over. We need wind. It's over. So I said, let's put some flick shakes on. I got a section of the lake we could go catch largemouth, and maybe the wind will pick up later. So we abandoned what we were doing, and we ran out, and we went largemouth fishing, and we were catching them flick shaking. And basically, the whole trick to that was finding the isolated grass patches, not the big wafts of grass, even though it's all immature now because it's not grown up on this lake, but where there's sand and gravel mixed in and the grass is just growing in isolated clumps. And we started catching the largemouth there. And of course, boat docks, because here on any natural lake, anywhere you fish in the country, if you have man-made structure, you need to fish it, because it is not normal to the lake and the bass use it. It could be sunken brush piles. It could be boat docks, sunken brush piles. Here, I'll do that again. Sunken brush piles. It could be boat docks. It could be retaining walls. Anything man-made on a natural lake, especially in the spring, you need to be fishing it, period. That's the whole deal. Another trick that I like to look for on natural lakes, and a lot of guys more up north will see this, driftwood, when you have big storms and floods and the trees fall in and the wind blows these big trees around, eventually they sink. So what I'll do is I'll start side imaging, looking for those big trees that sunk on the bottom, and they'll be isolated, and you'll find them in the most random, obscure places. Those can be fish magnets, absolutely fish magnets. Now, you'll run into that more when you've got the natural lakes that are surrounded by more trees. And when you're in the grass plains, you're not going to run into trees. You're just not going to run into them because they're not there. But that's really it. Like back in the day, I had the worst time of my life fishing grass lakes. Like I just couldn't figure it out. Because I was of the mindset, if there's grass there, there's bass there. It was so hit or miss for me.
I got a question about it after you're done with it though.
Okay. So little by little, what I started to realize was there's always determining factors that make some areas of a grass bed better than other areas. And usually it's bottom composition, a high spot, a ditch or a drain, or rock. Something is different in that section of the grass, or it's more than one type of vegetation together. That's usually the deal breakers right there. Go ahead.
Okay, so the man-made brush piles on natural lakes. I don't want to get into the legality of it on whether or not you should, but I'm thinking like Minnesota, New York, on these natural grass lakes.
Right.
It's man, and you mentioned anything man-made on natural lakes, in my experience in talking to people there, like guys don't go sink brush piles on Oneida.
No, the reason being is there are some sunken brush piles on Oneida. I found them. Okay. But the reason being is there's so much, especially Oneida and Champlain, there's so much good fishable structure.
You don't need it.
You don't need it. If you get on the right pattern, depth, type of vegetation, rock, whatever.
Okay.
If you're on the right pattern, you could literally run blind and run the pattern and catch fish. Champlain's probably been the most effective lake for me to fish for some stupid reason. I think I've got, I don't even know. I don't know. I've got like three seventh and eighth place finishes, second place finish. I've just got a lot of.
Can you imagine going out there with what your bass tank setup is now? Dude, it'd be like a whole different lake.
Dude, I am freaking out already using it. Like here. All right, so I have to give a shout out to the tank for helping me get everything set up on my boat, and of course Frankie for rigging everything for me, because I couldn't. The guys at the tank wanted to rig the boat for me.
The bass tank.
The guys at the bass tank couldn't. They wanted. Yeah,
he's kind of like that, Scott. Yeah, he's got his hands on it and wants to be on the water and make sure, and like it's.
Very hands-on.
Practicality goes out the window when it comes to wanting to make sure that someone's
right. And I
boat
love,
is rigged right.
And I love that about them. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that. But I couldn't drive all the way there just to have the boat rigged. You know what I mean? It was just it's too
basic too. One unit, 134 transducer. That's it.
Right. It was
it's not basic. Like Frank's doing a 7 screen up front with 9 transducers.
Yeah, 100%. It was too basic, so I couldn't do it. So I said, "Just I'll do it. Just let me know what I need to get, and I'll get it, and then I'll do it." And then, of course, you know, I went to Frankie's house, which is a lot easier to drive because it's, you know, an hour and 40 minutes instead of 15 hours. Here's why I love it so much. Okay. Yes, I have taken it out, and yes, I have scoped bass on it. That's not what excites me. What excites me is when I'm fishing the grass edges that I talk about so much, my accurate casting is almost 80% where I make the right cast first. Now, every now and then I'm going to cast in too high of a grass area, but that's just because you don't see everything. If the wind's blowing around, you're just scanning, you go, there's the grass edge, and you make the cast. You might have missed a finger of grass sticking out a little bit farther. So about 80% of the time I'm making the most accurate cast right off the rip, which is way more effective than the way I used to do it. I used to fan cast the edge of the grass where I assumed it was going until I stopped burying my crankbait up in the grass. And so that's one of the things I like about it. The other thing I like about it is when I stroll up on a brush pile, I can see the brush pile. Mm-hmm. And I can cast right in it, first time right in it. I know I'm hitting it. I'm not to the right. I'm not to the left. And of course, if I see fish suspending off the right or the left, I can pick up my jerkbait or my crankbait or my Damiki and swim it down there and catch the ones that are not in that brush pile. So there's definitely distinct advantages to forward facing sonar, especially for me as a structure fisherman, because I can see the rock piles. I can see all of it, and I know right where it is, and I know right where my cast has to go. So it's not, you know, if you think the only advantage of that, of that type of technology is to go in the middle of the lake and scope bass, you're missing a whole nother way to fish with it completely. So, yeah, I mean, here the other day we slaughtered them and I didn't cast that one fish that I saw in forward facing sonar.
But back to the brush piles, would they even get, Like I said, throw what you can and can't legally do. Right. Should a hardwood brush pile end up in the middle of Champlain, would those fish even migrate to it? Would they get on it?
Okay, that's a really good question, Matt, because random brush piles attract random fish. If you put the brush pile in the proper place, you're putting it in their migration zone. And they'll stop there and they'll use it.
Even if it's in grass,
as long as the grass doesn't choke the whole thing out. Although if it does, you could punch it.
Then why is it not up there? Because I don't care who you are or what you are. If those things are that effective, there's going to be brush piles all over there. Guys are going to find a way to get some wood in the water.
Well, because there, a lot of those lakes are so prolific and have such good fishing in them, you don't need that to attract the bass and hold them there. Okay. I shouldn't say attract the bass. I should say hold
it's unnecessary
there.
Work.
Yeah, it's very unnecessary.
Because you can catch them without it. That makes more sense. So yeah. Like in Oklahoma, you go out on a grassless, featureless rock lake, and it's very hard to pinpoint the fish. But if you drop a pile, you could go, okay, the fish are going to be here. You can do that on those natural lakes and still catch fish without right. going through the without going through the process. Now, this is a good question by Brett Anderson, which as we wrap up the final 15 minutes of the show, something we're doing each and every show now is a 10 minute. It's not a power question. Hour if it's 10 minutes, but rapid fire, rapid fire questions. And I also do want to, before we get into that, talk about the color number 7 that we are giving away, this week's winner for the color number 7. So this week we will announce the winner next week, because this is going to come from what you deem to be the best comment or question on this show. So if you're watching this as a replay on this show on YouTube, and you subscribe to the BTL channel, the best comment or question from this show that will be up on April 18th, the winner of the color number 7 will be selected on.
So what did you say? April 18th.
April 25th. Yeah, oh, that's today, next week. Yeah.
Today, so April 25th, we announced.
Yeah. So you have to have your comments in by April 24th, because we're going to have to record a show, because I will be at the Bass Cat owners meeting doing a live show on the 25th, which I just realized looking at my calendar right now.
Okay.
Which so also means I only have a week to get ready. So by the 24th, between the April 18th and April 24th, best comment on YouTube, comment or question on YouTube for Uncle Frank wins that one.
I'm writing notes like a madman. Okay. All right. So, okay. So where are we at? We're taking questions.
Yes. And rapid the fire. First question is from Brett Anderson, who said, how do cribs compare to brush piles?
Well, cribs are also really good, and they'll be in different depths of water also. There's cribs on Lake Erie, in fact, not that we're talking about the Great Lakes, but there's cribs on Lake Erie, and some of them are were made to for intakes, to protect the intakes and stuff like that, and some of them were put underwater. Well, I don't think they were supposed to be underwater, but the lake level changes from time to time, and they're a little bit shallower. Cribs are really good, depending on where they're located in the lake will determine what season they're better at. Some of the shallower ones are way better in the spring, so you'll want to keep that in mind too.
Doug going back wants to know, when you were talking about when you're giving out, are you throwing parallel or perpendicular, like where is the cast angles
okay
on what you showed before?
All right, so here we are. So if I got a gradual tapering transition like this,
yep,
and I don't know if the bass are in which zone the bass are at, I'm going to cast almost perpendicular to that. I want my crankbaits to run down the break. But if I know the bass are concentrated in a certain area, then I'll parallel that area and I'll fan cast that way on it.
So you'll checkerboard it almost like the graph paper.
Yeah, 100%. You have to. If you have a definitive grass edge where it's a definite line, I'm paralleling it. The starker the grass edge, the more parallel I'm going to be to it. The more gradual it tapers, I'm going to pick an angle till almost perpendicular with it. So I might start out at 45s or even 60 degree angles, and then I'm going to gradually go till I'm perpendicular casting, you know, T-boning it. It just depends. But if it's a vertical grass edge, I'm always paralleling it. Always paralleling it.
This is interesting. I was out graphing recently, found some 3-inch wooden fence posts hammered into the bottom in the middle of a flat. Probably going to be a weed bed later. Thoughts?
Yeah, somebody probably put those in as crappie mats.
Okay.
What they'll do is they'll take furring strips, one by ones, two by twos, and they pound them in, or they put them on pallets and then sink the pallets, and there'll be vertical stakes, and the crappies love them. And then you could, because there's nothing, no cross members and stuff like that, you can easily get your crappie lures and crappie jigs through all the stakes that stand up. I ran into that a ton on Kentucky Lake.
Yep.
A ton. There's a million crappie mats, and they range from super shallow where the posts are sticking out of the water all the way down to 15 or 20 feet deep. And here's the weird thing, speaking about Kentucky Lake. The first time I ever fished Kentucky Lake, there was no grass on it. And brush piles were the deal. They were the deal. Some years went by, I went back to Kentucky Lake, and it was loaded with grass. The brush piles didn't mean crap. The bass were relating to the grass. So just food for thought.
Have you seen what's happening on Kentucky Lake?
That depends on what you're.
There's a college tournament going on right now.
No,
I on Bassmaster. Look at this.
Yeah.
Look at these. There was like a 6'11" smallmouth weighed in on Kentucky. The winners had 22 plus in smallmouth. I mean, there's a couple largemouth bags. Quite a few largemouth bags, actually. But, like, a lot of all smallmouth, like, plus 20-pound bags coming in on Kentucky Lake. And, like, good-looking smallmouth, too.
Yeah, it's nice to see that. Back in the day, smallmouth were definitely a thing. But if you wanted to win, you had to have greenies in there with you. Now you could tell the lake's changing a little bit. I don't know if it's changing because of the fact of all the freaking Asian carp they got in there. I know for a while there was so many of those carp in there that the offshore fishing for largemouth was getting pretty grim because the carp were occupying a lot of the structure that the largemouth wanted. And so, you know, possibly because the smallmouth can become more pelagic, they're taking a better stronghold in the lake now. Oh,
Lord, look at all those freaking limits of smallies.
Yeah, that's
sweet. Kentucky Lake.
Yeah, man. It makes you kind of want to go back, doesn't it?
No. Last time I fished Kentucky Lake was a Toyota series in 2019. I had five keeper bites in 2 days. I cashed a check in 30th place.
Wow.
That's how rough it was. I had four the second day and one the first day and finished 30th out of like 200 boats.
Man alive. Well, that could have been
the prime of the Asian carp.
Yeah. Did you experiencing them jumping all over the place?
And then I also experienced, like, you literally could not. I was like fishing this flat and I thought I lost one a couple times. And it turns out, like, it was so thick with Asian carp.
They were just like every line.
Yeah. Like, and then you'd snag one. All right. Another question. Ohio River question from Derek. Is there a point at which the current actually starts slowing down when it's flooding, when the river's at its crest, it seems slower than just a few feet flooded?
Okay, the current's actually not slowing down. What's happening is the higher the water gets above any kind of structural element that could create an eddy or a funnel zone, it's getting so high above it that your eddies will look slow and swirling instead of, if the water's low, they're faster and swirling. So what you're seeing is the surface of it. It's just spreading out how that current's behaving. But no, unless they stop the flow from upriver, it's not going to slow the current down. As long as they're keeping it flowing, the current's going to be the same. But here's a trick on the Ohio River. When it's flooded, you need to fish all the eddy areas as far up as you can go with it, even behind the locks. when you get behind the locks that go up. I've had some of my best smallmouth days when that place was completely flooded, fishing the locks, you know, behind where you go up into the lock, not where the water's a torrent coming down, but where it eddies around and it's in the shipping lane in the lock. I've crushed them in there doing that.
That's some good stuff. Life update. You ready for the life update?
Oh yeah. Heck.
You can't forget things like this, Uncle Frank.
Oh my God.
This is something that you don't just forget. It's not like, oh, we forgot the BTL code. Oh, I forgot a box of Ned heads at the house. This is not on that same level.
Well, I am now a grandfather. My son Noah and his wife Sydney gave birth to a little baby girl whose name is Francesca, and they're going to call her Frankie for short.
So another Frankie Scalish?
Yeah, but a female version.
Yeah, but Frankie's a Frankie. Yeah, you can do a Frankie is either way.
Yeah. So that is what happened.
Grandpa Frank, that's the first grandchild.
Yeah, first one yesterday.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And I got to give a congratulations to them as well.
I like how yesterday you told me and I was like, oh, that's cool. And you're like, yeah. And then you're like, hold on, let me check the phone. Yeah, everything's good. And then we just went right back to the conversation. And then we hung up and I was like, wait a second. That's a big deal.
Oh yeah, it is a big deal, you know, and it was so funny because my buddy Troy called me and I was talking about the fishing day I had Tuesday. And so we were going over all that. And then we started to solve life's problems. And I said, oh yeah, by the way, dude, I'm a grandfather. He goes, you told me 10 things before you told me that. Which, yeah, that's great, man. That's
so
great.
Yeah. Are you now Grandpa Frank instead of Uncle Frank?
Who the hell knows? I don't know. I'll answer to anything as long as there's a Frank in it, you know. Thanks, you guys, for all your well wishes. But you know what's funny? I don't know how you want to end the show. Let's end the show on the on Grandpa Frank. We'll end the show there because at least I didn't forget. Yeah, no kidding. I don't forget. I don't forget. I just, there's a lot going on up here. And so some things just, I skim over them. You know what I mean? Paw Frank. Yeah, I think they're called, I'm a papa, I think.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool. Little tiny squirt, six pounds and change. I almost caught a largemouth as big as her the other day.
How many inches long? That's 24 inches. What was the girth?
She made the slot limit.
You should, like, seriously, right now would be the one of the few opportunities that you need to get a length and girth and weight on your first granddaughter and then see if you can catch a fish that is the exact same dimensions, and then you can have the pictures next to each other and then years down the road.
Do I have to lip them both?
Did this version of Frank Scalish ever think he would be a grandpa?
No, that version of Frank
was not thinking about life as a grandpa.
No, that version of Frank was always scared to be a father.
That version of Frank probably terrified a lot of grandpas.
Yeah, 100%.
That's fantastic. All right.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, you know what?
What's that? Oh, is that the tea? Don't get in trouble. I don't want you to get in trouble.
I don't know. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I said, just don't get in trouble.
I'm going to try not to get in trouble, but if I do, I do. Little teaser, there's some things coming down the pike. It'll probably break May 2nd.
That's soon.
Yeah, we're going to start.
Oh, yeah, and then tease it. That's really soon.
We're starting a signature series line of baits. Each bait is designed by me. My signatures are on them. The packages are numbered from 1 to 600. It's one and done. And there is we're going to drop them every single month starting May 2nd. It's a collectible, or you can fish it. It doesn't matter, but I'm really excited about it. That's as much detail as I can get in right now. It's going to be something really special to me anyway. But
you seem to talk about that almost as passionately as the new Grand Tour. I'm just giving you a hard time. No,
I know you are.
That is fantastic.
I know you are. So yeah, so that's it, man. I mean, there's, you know, yesterday was a good day.
I'm not supposed to have seen that packaging, but I saw it. It is really cool. And I do I've never seen numbered baits like that before on the packaging.
Yeah, the packaging, the card on the package has the numbers, the names, the everything on the packaging. And the bait just has my signature on it. So you could get a couple to fish with, a couple to collect. It's going to be a collectible because there's a series of them. And then it's going to be, you know, over. So it will be a full set of collectability to them. So yeah, it's kind of cool, really. I never thought in a million years, you know, I really never thought any of this, like what Matt and I are doing and all this stuff. When Mark introduced me to the show and stuff like that, I never dreamed that this would develop from that.
Well, and, you know what actually started it? What actually kind of was like, there's something here. It was the Glacial Deposits show.
Oh yeah, that when we did when they were talking about the smallmouth, because the tournament was up on Lake Erie, so you guys had me on to talk about the Great Lakes.
And you mentioned Glacial Deposits, and it went from there. And then Mark was like, "Well, maybe you could, you know, drop some knowledge every week." And then,
right.
So then he retired, then he fell. So then we did some shows, and then he retired. So then we really started to do some shows, and now it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny how things evolve. You know,
you speaking of things you never thought you'd ever see. Rick Klun is on Bass Live scoping.
What?
Out in the middle. Yeah, it's freaking cool.
The Klunster is using his eagle eyes.
Yeah, I think he was on Mercer's podcast. I feel bad because I'm so far behind. He's like one of the few other podcasts that I listen to. And I think he said it on Mercer's show that his goal is to win a tournament scoping before he hangs it up.
That will be epic. You realize that. The ultimate old school guy wins a scoper. Scoping tournament.
He's in 21st right now.
Well, he's got some ground to go.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not in bad shape.
No, by no stretch. Is that the open? I mean, is that the elites in Florida?
Yeah.
How's that shaking out? Just out of my curiosity, I didn't look today yet.
They only got 2 days of practice.
Right, I heard that.
So right now, 18 pounds is leading it on day one. But there's some names up there. Mark Menendez always catches them there. Greg Hackney's in the top 10. Todd Auten. You fish against Todd Auten, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all of them. All of the above.
They're catching the heck out of small fish. A lot of five fish for 7 pounds. Five fish. That's classic Florida.
Yeah, I mean, and it's early. It's early in the day yet.
Yeah.
I imagine as the sun gets up, things will start to change a little bit. Is there spawn? Is it over now, or is it tailing out?
Tailing out. There's still a few fish on beds. I think John Cox is targeting a few, and some of the guys who spawn are targeting a few. I think that's wild in Florida. I mean, you can fish for spawners, 6 months out of the year, if you really want to,
depending on
where you go and what you find.
I've seen end of November, December start, and seen it go all the way to the beginning of May. But I think I would be, if the most of the spawn is over, I would be totally shell bed fishing. Probably.
And I wonder if Blockett's going to disown Rick Klund now. That'll be interesting.
Are you just lobbing up a softball for me to hit out of the park?
I don't know.
Because I just, you know, it's a tool that we have to our trade. And if you don't master it,
then you end up posting six times a day bitching about it.
Right. Well, the thing is if you're a, if you're a professional tournament angler and you don't embrace this,
yeah,
then you've only got a chance to do good in a handful of tournaments.
If you just fun fish and you don't explore it and take the elements that you like and leave the elements that you don't,
right,
you're not maximizing your time on the water.
Right. 100%. I scope crappies more than I do bass by a long shot. And I use it to enhance the way I fish. You know,
we don't need to do this. No, we had such a good show.
We had a great show.
I feel like that was my doing. I apologize.
All right, let's rewind it. Let's rewind it.
Ben's making a nice comeback. He's in the top 20 right now.
There you go.
He's got a limit for 10 pounds.
That could change too. That could get better too.
All right. Next week, stay tuned. We'll be back on Thursday. I don't know if it'll be live next week. Like I said, I'm looking at my big calendar here and I'm like, holy cow. Yeah, we're leaving in a week because I go from the Cat Owners Tournament on Norfolk directly to the Bassmaster Open in Alabama, and then you are actually going to be gone the first week of May, so we might either do a live show earlier next week, or I don't know,
I could potentially bring my computer with me and do it live wherever I'm going.
We'll do it live. Well, that doesn't work because on May 2nd, I will be on Logan Martin practicing.
Okay, so we'll have to, you and I have to get together and figure out when we're going to record all these.
Yeah, because there's a bunch of stuff dropping that we have to make sure.
Oh, yeah. There's things happening. Yeah.
We'll have to do some coordinating. Just, you know what? I'll just have my people call your people and then they'll figure it out.
Perfect.
At work.
Which basically means Matt's going to call me later.
This has been another edition of Day 4 with the man Frank Scalish, Natural Lakes, and
grandfather.
And a grandfather. The importance of those, not in that order. It would go grandfather, Shad Week, Natural Lakes Show.
Perfect.
All right, we'll talk to everybody next week. See ya.